Blog Talk Radio.
I was meant to fly. Oh, oh, oh. I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
Oh.
Living off what people say and giving all the power to the things that were only gonna bring me to.
Welcome to HYH Radio, and I'm your host, Yvonne Pierre. I was born in Gary, Indiana, and my sister and I decided that we wanted to move, and we wanted a change of environment. My sister suggested that we move to Atlanta. We combined our tax return checks, and I've never been to Atlanta before then. So we came for about a week. I fell in love with being here, and flew back to Gary, and then put in my 2-week notice and drove back to Atlanta. We've been here ever since. I moved here on faith. At the time, I was a single mom with my oldest son. I have 2 sons, my oldest son, and it was extremely scary because I was moving out of my comfort zone. Today's guest is a woman that is no stranger to change. She was a single mom, and she understands and know how to overcome challenges, and she's also works on faith. I've had the pleasure of knowing her for a couple of years now, and she's very inspirational to me. Let me give you a brief overview of Angela Peabody. She was born and raised in Liberia, and she was very well into her career when she had a what I would call a rude awakening. And she was exiled out of her country here to the United States. She was also a single mom who had to start from scratch. But I want to introduce her and welcome her to the show. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Yvonne. Thank you for having me.
As I was telling the listeners, you were exiled out of Liberia. And I want to go back to the day before the massacre. You were well off into your career, correct?
Yes.
And you were a mom. You had 2 kids.
Yes.
And at the time, life was good as you know it.
At the time, life was great. It couldn't have been better.
So what happened? You were woke up out of your sleep?
Yes, I was awakened. At the time, I was married. I was happily married. I had a television career that was very successful, my own TV show, and my husband at the time was the most popular radio disc jockey in the country, and we had 2 boys, 2 sons. We went to bed that night, and the next morning we woke up to find out that the country had been taken over by the Liberian military by 17 men, enlisted men, and they had assassinated the president, and we were in danger because our families were very political. We were very politically involved.
Your mom was the mayor?
Yes, she was the mayor of the city of Marshall, where she was born and where she is today buried. And my father, who was already passed away, was a judge when he died. My father-in-law, was also passed away, but he had been the general secretary of the head of the ruling party at the time that had been overthrown. So you can see why our lives were in very much in danger.
Yeah. Now, you said your mom, they didn't pass due to the massacre, did they?
No, my mother was still alive at the time. Both my father and my father-in-law had passed away prior to the massacre.
So you woke up.
And somebody rang our doorbell, and my husband went to the door, and he was told that the government had been overthrown. There had been, as they call it, a coup d'etat, a military coup d'etat, and it was a bloody one because many, many people lost their lives. And that's how I woke up that morning to that. It was frightening. I had never I had never lived to see a coup d'etat before. I had only heard about it when it happened to countries, to other African countries surrounding ours. So it was like a far away thing, a distant thing. It wasn't something that we were accustomed to at all. Liberia was a very peaceful country. We enjoyed the beaches. It was serene, and nobody feared anything. We walked around. Our children played in the yard without fear. But all of that ended overnight.
So when you walked out the door, could you see anything that was?
We could hear. We didn't have to walk out the door. We could hear bullets. We could hear gunfire in the distance, and it was constant. It was all day long. We listened to the radio. We were housebound. We couldn't go out because you were likely to be killed. So we stayed in the house all day after that, and we listened to the radio monitoring it, and then we just sat there waiting for whatever would happen. We didn't know what would happen. We didn't know what our lives would be like after that. It's a very, very frightening thing because you and I today can say, well, we can plan to go to the mall, or we can plan to go out. You just don't know what the next moment will present. And all day we were hearing gunfire. And then later that afternoon, I knew that how dangerous everything had become was when the soldiers came to arrest our neighbor. He was a retired general, and they dragged him out. We watched from the window when they dragged him out of his home and put him in the jeep, and his wife came out screaming and crying, and the soldier took the butt of his gun and shoved her in the stomach, and she fell out on the ground. And I couldn't stand to see any more of that. I just walked away from the window, and I went into my bedroom, and I remember just crying bitterly.
How old were your boys at the time?
My oldest son was 7, and my younger son was 4.
So they allowed women and children. How did they get to the point where you were exiled out the country?
Well, once we lived through all of that, they decided they allowed women and children only to leave the country. None of the men could leave, and little did I know that was the demise. That was the beginning of the demise of my marriage, because we were separated. My husband had to stay, and the children and my mother-in-law came ahead, and I didn't leave until about 3 months later. I had to live through that because they wouldn't allow, even though they allowed women and children to leave, they would not allow the whole family, like a whole family, to leave at a time. So we had to leave in bits and pieces. We had to leave like 2 at this time, 4 at this time. So my mother-in-law left at first, and she took all the grandchildren with her. And I stayed, so including those grandchildren, included my 2 sons.
So did you have somewhere to go, or how did you ended up in New York, correct?
Yes, I ended up, when I came, my mother-in-law had settled in Maryland with the children when I came, and I tried to get a job in the Washington, D.C. area, and I was unable to do that, so I went to New York and got a job there, and I used to take the train from New York every Friday and shuttle down to Maryland to spend the weekend with my children and the family, and then go back Sunday evening. And that's what I had to do for months. In fact, not months, but I did it for the first 3 years I was here. Every weekend I spent with my children and the rest of the family in Maryland, and then Sundays I went back to New York to report to work on Monday.
When you go through something as traumatic as a massacre, did you have, like, flashbacks, or did you have, like, nightmares, and how did you get through that?
Oh, yes, I had many flashbacks, even till today. It's been 27 years, and I still have flashbacks. It never goes away. When you have machine guns, when they shoot up the house with you and your family in it for 25 minutes, and then they proceed to come into the house and terrorize you with machine guns pointed at your heads for hours, you never live that down. You never. So when we first came, we had to give my sons and the other grandchildren, my mother-in-law had to take them to the doctor, and they were on medication to be able to sleep because they were having nightmares, and that was the children. And
yeah.
I thought I was strong enough until the first time I saw a U.S. soldier in New York. I entered the building where I lived, and a soldier was standing by the elevator, and I couldn't go any further. I just turned around and I froze and turned around and ran out of the building. And this had been months after I arrived in the United States, so I knew that it was something that would stay with me for a long, long time. And it kept reliving every April. The coup d'etat occurred on April 12th, and as April approached every year, I dreaded it. I couldn't go to work, and my supervisor once suggested that I see a shrink, and I said, in Africa we don't believe in seeing shrink. We talk to our families. We go to the elders and talk to them. But I was fortunate, I was blessed to have the gift to write, to be a journalist.
Yeah.
And something that my other fellow Liberians didn't have, and so I took advantage of it, and I used the writing as a form of therapy.
So you end up writing the book Exile.
Yes.
That was the therapy you were speaking of.
That was my therapy, yes.
And you use fictitious characters in the book, correct?
Yes, I do.
But it's very parallel to your life now, I mean, to what you went through then.
Yes.
And then after that, you are the first published Liberian woman?
Yes, I'm the first woman, Liberian woman, to publish a novel. I'm the first.
So you've written, after you wrote Exile, then you wrote a book of poems that was kind of like an extension of
Exiled, yeah.
Of Exiled. And then you also was a co-author of millionaire, welfare to millionaire.
Yes, it's a welfare to millionaire is about a lady, a Sierra Leonean lady who came to this country to go to school, and she lost her scholarship and she became homeless, and she worked her way up. She worked her way up and became a millionaire.
Millionaire. And this is a true story.
Oh yes, it is a true story. In fact, I just sent her an email yesterday because she had sent me one.
Okay. Now you have a magazine called Global Woman.
Yes.
What motivated you to write Global Woman magazine?
Because Global Woman magazine, I created it because I saw the need for a publication of that nature. They have so many magazines out there on the newsstand for women. They have women for black women, they have for white women, and they have for Spanish women and European and African women, but there was no publication that encompassed every woman in the world. And I wanted to see, I had a vision that I wanted to bring women from all, regardless of nationality, race, or religion, to bring all of them together in one medium, in one forum, where they could express themselves, where they could feel free to tell, share their stories with each other, because there are so many women in the world that every day make history, but we never hear about them if they're not, if the news media doesn't feel that they're newsworthy. We don't hear about their stories. How many teachers that make a difference in a child's life and we never know about it, or a nurse or a female doctor might save somebody's life and we never know about it. So women, a woman like you, you are a fantastic mother.
Thank you.
And nobody would know what you're doing, or even I. So I decided to start this magazine where all women could feel free to write from all over the world, write their stories, their personal stories, in the first person, and share them with other women in the world. And it would inspire, my vision was to have to put out stories that would inspire, empower, educate, inform women, and enlighten them. And that's what Global Woman does.
You went through a lot of challenges, to say the least. Do you have anything you would like to share, like with other single moms or women in general, that will give them a word of encouragement?
Yes, I will tell all mothers, single mothers especially, love your children dearly, but discipline them when it is necessary. Stress education to them, and stress that to them that they should do everything they can to abide by the law and not get into any trouble that will take them to prison. There are too many young people today that are in prison, and it might not be the parents' fault. It might not be the young person's fault, but I think the way I was raised is that it begins in the home. Everything, the way you are molded and the way you're raised begins in the home. That foundation is laid there in the home when you're 4 years old and five and six and seven. By the time you get to 10 years old, that foundation is already laid firmly. And even though a teenager might stray a little from that upbringing, he or she will come right back to it when the foundation has been laid firmly. But if
that, I believe that.
Yes.
I believe that.
If that foundation isn't laid firmly, then he or she will never come back. And I'm talking from experience because with my two boys, my older son gave no trouble. My younger son, he started to stray a little when he finished high school. But my sisters kept telling me, the foundation is laid, don't worry. And with prayer and that foundation we had laid with him, my son today is one of the best fathers and husbands that you can find, and
yeah,
a hardworking man. So that's what I would, that's the advice I would give. Love them, but make sure that you give them, you empower them with the things that will carry them, the attributes that will carry them throughout the rest of their lives.
I was thinking about something you said one time we spoke a while back when we were talking about overcoming, and I think that you are a very inspirational person in my life and a very dear friend. But something you said, you used a metaphor about being in the middle of the ocean.
Yes.
You've overcome a lot of different things, and you pretty much use this metaphor, relate this metaphor to how you overcome a lot of obstacles that you face. Could you share that metaphor?
Yes, I tell people, even whether I'm speaking with a friend like you or a business person, I always tell them that I feel like I'm in, especially with the magazine, I've come up against a lot of obstacles, and I always feel like I'm in the middle of the ocean, and I look back, and I see nothing but darkness behind me. But when I look ahead, there's a light in a far distance, and I know that I need to continue to move forward and not turn around and go back, because there's no light behind me, but there's light all the way ahead of me, and I know that I need to keep going to until I get to that light. And that is the advice I would give to anybody. When I happen to be a football fan, for you know, people marvel at the fact at my knowledge of American football,
mm-hmm.
the fact that I was not born here or didn't grow up here. But I always equate it also to when you watch football, a quarterback is sacked. And when he's sacked, he gets right up and brushes himself off, and he throws the next pass. There's no time to mull over it or mourn over it. And those things keep me going, because I think, well, there's no time to sit and mourn. My son told me, my younger son once, he said, Mommy, you go into your office and you work every day, your home office, and you work like you have $1 million in the bank. And I said, what am I going to do? Curl up in bed and mourn because
I
don't have money? God has given me the gift to write. He's given me this beautiful product, Global Woman Magazine.
And everything you do pretty much is on faith.
It's on faith, everything. I stepped out solely on faith. You recall last year, June 30th, was my last day on my job of many years, and that I had been on for many years, and I stepped out solely on faith and to start to work on Global Woman Magazine. And I've been doing that ever since. It's something I strongly believe that this is my ministry. You know, people equate ministries to only when you preach and you go, you know, ministry of the gospel. But it's not only that. Everyone has a ministry. You have your ministry, and that is what you're endeavoring to do now. And I believe that Global Woman Magazine is my ministry because through it, I can send out so many messages to women and girls all over the world, and I can also help them because I have so many programs going on.
You've been through a lot of challenges, and you've overcome a lot of challenges, and you are one of the most humble women that I know. What keeps you humble, Angela?
Thank you. It's ironic that you would even ask that question today when I think it was just Monday I was speaking with another friend, and she was saying, you are very humble. You're the most humble person I know. And she said something that really caught my attention. She said, a lot of people say, I'm humble. She said, if you're humble, you don't say it. Other people will see it and notice it. And she said, I've never heard you say you're humble, but I've noticed it. So thank you. I take it as a compliment when somebody points out to me that I'm a humble person, because it is how my mother brought me up. She told me that my parents were old when they had me, and my mother thought she couldn't have another child, and because she thought she had reached menopause stage, and then I came along. And she said I was a baby and they took me out, people would stop them on the street and they thought they were my grandparents, and they would, you know, they would play with me and say, oh, she's so cute. And my mother told me every time, she said, as I grew up, she said, don't ever think of yourself as beautiful or pretty or good looking. Let other people see it. Let other people look in you, in your heart, and see what is in you, the beauty in you. Don't look at yourself and say, I'm beautiful. Let other people, whether it's internal or external, and humbleness is one of those things that just came naturally like that because of her teachings to me and telling me, let other people see it in you and see the attributes in you and tell you about it.
I believe that.
Yes.
What is your web address?
It's www.globalwoman, G-L-O-B-A-L, woman, W-O-M-A-N, -magazine.com.
No matter who pushes me.
Well, we're just about out of time. I would like to thank you so much, Angela, for sharing your story. For more information about Angela and previous guests and upcoming shows, visit www.hyhradio.com. Thank you, Angela, so much.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Until then, keep swimming forward and be blessed and be a blessing to others.